Hello, I'm Francis Bradley. This is number 0448, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0448. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Brenda Cantrell, the brand ambassador for the Unclaimed Baggage Center. They make a living selling off all that lost baggage.
We're the only store in America that buys and resells unclaimed baggage from the airline industry. We purchase these items sight unseen after the airlines have spent 90 days trying to reunite bags with their owners. And over 99.9% of the time, they are successful. But it does leave that small percent available for us to purchase through our salvage agreements and bring them back here to Alabama.
Actress Joyce Boulafont, who recently released her memoir entitled My Four Hollywood Husbands. The title of the book was suggested by a friend of hers.
He told me the title, and I said, that is so tacky. That's disgusting. I would never call my book that. And then I thought about it, and 2 weeks later, I thought, you know what? That might sell books. And it's a way to go with the story that is much more important to tell than just, here's my life. Because it involves why were there so many husbands. And the why is all has to do with alcoholism and my codependency and the effect that had on my children.
And we have lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guests later. The person who told you this was show number 0448 was Francis Bradley, the chief operating officer of the Canadian Electric Association. And he's also someone I went to college with oh so many years ago. Many, many, many years ago. Thank you very much, Francis, for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File program. Much appreciated. A program that is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A man stopped at a stop sign in Austin, Texas, and another man, later identified as 28-year-old Corey Patrick, approached the car and the driver rolled down the window. The police affidavit says Patrick yelled, "Get out of the car!" The man tried to pull up the window again, but Patrick managed to smash it, attacking the driver and jumping into the driver's seat. Patrick attempted to drive away, but he wasn't able to figure out how to drive the vehicle. The 2017 Chevy Bolt involved is an electric car, and the owner told police that the vehicle cannot be driven like a normal vehicle and takes some getting used to. When a witness ran over to help, Patrick ran, but was captured by police. You know, this seems to be a modern-day take on the myriad of stories we've seen in the past where people tried to steal a car but couldn't manage to drive it because it had manual transmission. Ah, yes. Technology now marches on. A new group of people who can't drive for one reason or another. Gotta love it. Anyway, even before it opened last year, Apple's spaceship building in California presented a transparency problem. Its glass walls couldn't be distinguished from its glass doors, and since moving in on January 2nd, several workers have been injured after walking into them. The San Francisco Chronicle reported three people suffered head injuries severe enough to summon emergency responders. Apple's Vice President of Real Estate and Development, Dan Wissenhunt, told the local Rotary Club in January that they hadn't had any problems with birds flying into the glass. Now the humans on the inside, that's a different story, he said. That's a problem we are working on right now. Architects have added black rectangular stickers to the glass panes, which seem to be helping. So, what Apple's VP is saying is that the birds in the area are smarter than their employees. How statements like that don't affect Apple's stock is a wonderment. Meanwhile, a Florida high school teacher turned violent and began repeatedly punching another woman in the face because she dared wear very short pants to a Little League ball game.
Who wears short shorts?
Clay County Police arrested 37-year-old Terry Lee Corsi after an argument turned physical. According to police, Corsi began punching a woman because she thought her short shorts were inappropriate to wear at a kid's baseball game.
There's such short shorts.
The incident allegedly occurred on February 23rd at 7 p.m. during a Little League baseball practice at the Orange Park Athletic Association baseball fields located in Orange Park, Florida. A police report also noted that the victim had visible bruises and contusions on her face, forearms, and a cut to her right wrist. She also had abrasions on her shoulder, elbow, and chest. Corsi, a teacher at Clay High School in Green Cove Springs, pleaded not guilty to a first-degree misdemeanor charge of simple battery. According to court records, Corsi was suspended by her school district pending the outcome of the case.
We wear short shorts.
Now, depending on which side of the issue you're on, this story may or may not change your feelings on arming teachers. I mean, just imagine, if she goes ballistic over shorts, just think what she would do if there was a real threat.
Dig that crazy chick.
And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Linda Fain and her husband thought they had found their dream home in Paradise Valley near Phoenix. They offered $1.8 million for the house on a 1.3-acre lot, but then found out the house belonged to Kevin and Sandra Otterson and was the setting for their pornography website, Wifey's World, which was founded back in 1998. I just can't make Thanksgiving dinner on counters where a porn star has been lounging around, Linda told the Arizona Republic. In late February, the couple rescinded their offer on the four-bedroom home. I certainly believe there are people out there who wouldn't care about the house being used for those purposes, Linda explained. I'm just not one of them. Well, you know, Linda, you could always put in new counters. I mean, there's nothing that a thorough cleaning and or remodeling can't do. I fail to see the problem unless you walked into the house with a black light and the place lit up like a Jackson Pollock painting. Yes. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Ever wonder what happens to all of that lost baggage out there? Well, there's a company in Alabama called the Unclaimed Baggage Center. Tractor-trailer loads of lost baggage arrive at their processing facility to be sorted, priced, and sold. Not only is it a thriving business, but the Unclaimed Baggage Center is now one of Alabama's top tourist attractions, hosting over 1 million visitors a year. On the line with us right now is Brenda Cantrell, who is the brand ambassador for the Unclaimed Baggage Center. Hi, Brenda.
Hello, how are you today?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. Now, I keep seeing commercials kind of advertising this because they did, I guess, a story on it on MSNBC a little while ago.
Yes, it aired just this past week.
Yeah, so they keep showing these promos and commercials for it, and I found this idea fascinating. So I went to your website, looked up a little bit of the story of the Unclaimed Baggage Center. I'm sure a lot of us often wonder, you know, what happens to all that lost baggage, and we kind of now know. Tell us a little bit about the Unclaimed Baggage Center.
Well, we're the only store in America that buys and resells unclaimed baggage from the airline industry. We purchase these items sight unseen after the airlines have spent 90 days trying to reunite bags with their owners. And over 99.9% of the time, they are successful. But it does leave that small percent available for us to purchase through our salvage agreements and bring them back here to Alabama.
Now, this was started by a gentleman and his family, I guess, in the 60s. And he literally started this business out of his house, right?
Well, he did. He started out of a house in 1970. Mr. Doyle Owens had this thrift store idea and a friend up in Washington, D.C. who worked for a bus line. And as the great, you know, entrepreneur story goes, he borrowed $300 from one grandfather and a pickup truck from the other. And he and his wife drove up to buy their first load of unclaimed baggage. When they brought it back here to Scottsboro, they rented a small two-bedroom house here in town and were only open after hours because he still had a day job. But they quickly realized that they were onto something as people were coming from a little bit further out than, say, just Scottsboro. And in the 70s, you know, people had to drive to get here then as well. And so by the mid-70s, they started approaching the airline industry and moved to our current address. Of course, the stores, the building itself has gone through a number of revisions to expand the retail footprint. But this is where we are, and it's where we call home.
Now, it's a fascinating process that you go through. As I mentioned in the introduction, the stuff is sorted, priced, and sold. In some cases, cleaned, too. You have to clean clothing that might be inside. You have to appraise jewelry that might be inside. All this kind of stuff. First of all, do you buy the bags sight unseen? In other words, you don't know what's in it till you get it?
Exactly. We have no idea what we're getting. And so obviously, when we get these items, we don't sell everything that we purchase. We sell about a third, donate about a third, and throw away or recycle about a third.
So what is it the type? What are the types of things that you sell? What are the types of things that you donate? And what are the types of things that you throw away?
Well, we'll start with what we throw away. I mean, obviously, you know, magazines, ripped clothing, you know, things that are not of a family-friendly nature, things that are broken, we're going to throw all those types of things away. And then things that we'll donate. For example, yesterday we did a big donation with an organization called Wheels for the World, and we donated nearly 150 wheelchairs, probably several hundred walkers, things like that that people, you have no idea why they needed those items when they got on the plane and didn't need them when they got off. But we try to make sure those go to good use and those will be repaired and sent back out on mission trips. Eyeglasses, we give a significant amount to Lions Club International. There are volume of clothing, household items that we partner with quite a few nonprofits under our Reclaimed for Good program. And then what we have remaining is the items that would quickly turn in a retail environment. So you have electronics, clothes, jewelry. Yes, you still have household and eyewear, shoes, things like that.
Now, as you say, most of the stuff that the airlines have in their lost baggage eventually gets reclaimed by those who lost them in the first place, and you get that minuscule percentage that never get claimed. But having said that, is there ever a situation where you come across something where somehow you manage to find the original owner?
Well, that's not the business. That's not our business model. And so it is our understanding that once those items come to us, if there was any form of identification on them, the airlines were unsuccessful with that information. Another element to this are things that are carried on as a passenger. The airlines are not legally liable for those items that are carry-on. As a passenger, you chose the responsibility to take the risk, if you will. I mean, you don't want to call it a risk, but you take the risk of putting that item in an overhead compartment and anticipate getting that same item off, which, believe it or not, people leave behind suitcases full of items. They leave, like I said, those wheelchairs and walkers. We get, of course, lots of lap blankets and neck pillows and things like that. A lot of electronics get slid into those backseat pockets, and they forget them when they're getting off the plane. And so those are not covered under the contract of carriage because as the passenger, you chose liability for it. And so those types of items come to us a little bit quicker through our purchasing agreements, and we send all our electronics through Department of Defense protocol to clear contents, or we wholesale, you know, things that are locked. A lot of electronics come in locked now. We'll wholesale those off for parts.
Now, as you mentioned earlier, you have agreements with airlines to get stuff from them. But how did this begin? Like when the company was first started, approaching the airlines to say, "Hey, we'd like your lost baggage."
Well, certainly travel was significantly different in 1970 and 75 than it is today. So the volume was certainly not the scale of what we see, you know, at the highest travel volumes in history right now. And so, again, it was just a small operation. The technology to track bags was nothing like what it is now. And so the process was significantly different there. But I will assure you that the airlines did not profit from this purchase. I mean, they employ teams of people and technology and resources to try to get those bags back to their owners. As any business owner, you know, at the end of the day, wants to know that they've treated their guests well and have done everything in their power to give them a positive experience. And so that is what these teams of people do. I mean, more than likely, you know, I know this has happened for me. It's probably happened for you. Your bag's been delayed and a courier brought it maybe later that day or a couple days later. And so, you know, this money goes towards those types of things. But one carrier in particular, and we don't disclose who we deal with, but instead of receiving payment directly, their payment goes to a nonprofit agency for the bags. So, you know, it works different with different vendors, but it is not out to get an extra dollar, I can assure you.
Now, I mentioned in the introduction that your facility is also a top tourist attraction. How did that happen?
Well, we're the only one in America. I mean, it's like a Disney World or a Graceland or the giant ball of yarn, you know, on your bucket list. And we're in a number of publications and books that are great for, you know, whether it's a roadside attraction or a must-see in your state or did-you-know bucket list books. I mean, I have a handful of different publications on my desk right now that we're featured in. Had a guest from Hershey, Pennsylvania come down about a month ago that I had the opportunity to meet, that they were trying to go to all the different places in the book, and it was all over the country. And so, you know, people hear about us on your radio program. They see us on MSNBC, or the people from Hershey, Pennsylvania come down and shop with us and go back and tell their friends. And it's just a phenomenal store. It's a fun experience when you get here. And we don't have an online, you know, sales channel, so you have to come here to shop. And we really wow you with our experience, not only from our Southern hospitality, but different things that we have going on in the store to make it worth your while and make it fun.
Now, you get things from not just the United States now, but you get things from all over the world, correct?
Well, we deal with domestic carriers, but obviously there's a lot of international travelers that fly on domestic carriers, and so we do have our fair share of international items that come in.
So what are some of the more exotic things that you would have in your store at any given time, or what would you consider some of the most exotic things you've had over the years?
Well, the number one most exotic set was rattlesnake. But we've also had, you know, we have wedding dresses on a regular basis, and you don't know if those are on their way to or from the wedding, and you hope it's the latter. But we try to give these things new life. They're reclaimed for good, whether it's through donation or purchase, recycling. But, you know, the jewelry that we get, and people stop and go, why in the world would somebody not claim that? Well, we don't know what they were thinking, one, when they packed that item in their suitcase, and two, some of these items, you know, the appraisal value is phenomenal on them, and if it wasn't of a sentimental value to them, they got a payout and went and bought something else from it. You know, maybe something that they liked better. I don't know. Case in point, we have a diamond and gold bracelet in our jewelry case that is appraised for $42,000. And so our selling price is $21,000, and somebody will eventually buy it because we've sold things more expensive than that in recent years.
Wow. What's the most expensive thing you've sold?
2 or 3 years ago, we had a men's presidential platinum Rolex watch, and we had it appraised, and it was valued at $64,000, and we sold it for $32,000.
So you basically sell everything for half of its retail value?
Jewelry is half of the appraisal value, and all the other items are anywhere from 20 to 80% off suggested price. That equates to a good deal, a great deal, or a fantastic deal. I actually bought, there was this coat that I had seen out on the sales floor, and employees do not get first pick, I can assure you of that. We have very tight disciplinary measures in place to keep that from happening. But the coat on the sales floor a month or two ago, and I just walked by and I saw it, and I looked at the price tag, and I have a coat fetish from working here, and so I have like 7 different black coats to fit my personality and for the day, and there was this coat, and it was like $275. I thought, oh, I don't need it. I've got enough coats. Well, we've been going through our winter clearance, so last week it went 75% off, and I just happened to see that it was still there. I thought, well, I'll try it on today, and it fit, and it wasn't $275. It was $175. So I walked out the door with it for $40, and it was a $4,000 coat.
Wow.
And it was brand new. Now, that's not everything in our store, but anybody could have walked in and bought that. I just happened to be the one to buy it that day. You know, it had been on a display for a month or two. And so it's just worth having for that matter, even if I wear it once a year.
It's an amazing business. And, you know, it goes to the way this business started goes to the ingenuity of people to find a niche for themselves. And it's turned into, as you say, and as I said earlier, Alabama's top tourist, one of their top tourist attractions. So amazing, with a million visitors a year. And again, the only way one can purchase stuff is to do it in person. You can't do it online, correct?
That is correct, yes. We do not have a branded e-commerce element to our business.
But people can still take a look at what you guys do and who you are by going to your website at unclaimedbaggage.com. Brenda, I thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us.
Well, it was great talking with you, and we hope to have some Canadians come down our way. We get them all the time.
Well, Canadians do love to shop for a bargain. That was Brenda Cantrell, the brand ambassador for the Unclaimed Baggage Center. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0448, and you'll find links to their site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. This broadcast is coming to you from upstairs. Get out of the house.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Joyce Boulafont, who is the author of My Four Hollywood Husbands. Of course, Joyce was a great actress in her own right, and still is, by the way. We have an Idiot of the Day coming your way a little later on the program as well, and much more Stuff File news here on a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, a motorist on the 91 freeway in Long Beach, California, called 911 at 1 a.m. to report something remarkable on the roadway. A man riding a horse, a white Arabian. The horse, not the man. An officer arrived as the horse had taken the next exit, and the cop says that its rider, Luis Alfredo Perez, had a blood alcohol level of more than twice the legal limit. It was Perez's 29th birthday, and he was arrested for, yes, DUI on a horse. He was booked on $10,000 bail, and Perez's mother arrived quickly to pick up the horse. Although she couldn't pick up the horse's ass until she posted his bail. That explains the long face. Name recognition wouldn't be a problem for the Libertarian Party challenger for Eastern Arkansas's 1st Congressional District seat, Elvis D. Presley. The king impersonator from Star City, Arkansas, who legally changed his name to match the rock and roll icons, although the real Elvis's middle initial was A, filed campaign paperwork on February 26th. Presley works as an auto refinish technician at Camp's Custom Paint in Star City, but his political ambitions aren't new. He also ran for governor, land commissioner, and state legislature. You notice that I said he also ran for those other positions. I never said he won. It would appear that after Election Day, Elvis leaves the building. Peoria Police Department officers in Arizona were called to a gas station February 23rd in response to a shoplifting. When they arrived, suspects 28-year-old Marwan El Abadi and 29-year-old Selma Huria set off on foot before hopping over a fence directly into a secured parking lot of the Peoria Police Department. Huria tried to hide behind, or beneath rather, a bench outside of the station, while El Abadi jumped back over the fence and was stopped in the street. Both were arrested and charged with shoplifting. "You should never run from the police," said police spokesman Brandon Sheffert, "and if you do, do not run into a secure parking lot of a police station." Yes, because they do enjoy the hunt And why make it that easy for them, huh?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, this is a situation that seems to keep coming up more and more often these days, and I can't explain why. Here's the latest installment. Nova Scotia RCMP didn't have to go far to arrest a suspected drunk driver. He came to them. They say the man went to their Antigonish detachment, hoping to release a friend who was in police custody. But officers arrested the man after determining he was heavily intoxicated and had driven there in his 2008 Pontiac Wave. 27-year-old Michael Taylor Pinkham from Rocheville, Nova Scotia, faces several charges including impaired driving, failing to comply with an undertaking, and public intoxication. Now, why is it that drunk people think it's a good idea to waltz into a police department to bail friends out? I mean, they never seem to realize that it just becomes a two-for-one sale for the cops. And police say a 19-year-old Indiana man took a cab to and from a bank robbery and that he paid the driver with some of his stolen cash. Derek Faria was arrested less than an hour after the robbery of a bank in Evansville. Faria reportedly passed a teller a note demanding money, but he didn't show a weapon. Faria is being held at the Vandenberg County Jail on preliminary charges of robbery and possession of drug paraphernalia. How do you not expect to get caught when you call a cab to go and rob a bank and you have them wait for you? And with today's technology, it's a lot easier to get caught. I say that because I go back to the 70s. I had an uncle who was a taxi driver. He was a taxi driver for about 40 years. And he got a call once to pick up somebody, and he went to pick them up, and they went and robbed a bank. And the only reason the cops, who didn't think that my uncle was an accomplice in the robbery, the only reason for that was because he didn't hail the cab. He actually called for a cab, and my uncle showed up. That was another idiot, that guy, but this clown here is a modern-day version of that, I guess. Anyway, I didn't make him the idiot of the day. That comes later, so stick around for that. In the meantime, I do have one more Stuff File news story before I get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. A Kenosha, Wisconsin man was arrested after a woman cracked him on the head with a hammer because he forced his way into her home. Kenosha police said that they were called at around 3:30 p.m., finding a 35-year-old man outside the building bleeding from his head. The woman told police the man was a friend, but said he had showed up uninvited and apparently intoxicated and pushed his way into her apartment. He refused to leave and began to physically tussle with the woman. She grabbed a hammer, struck him on the head once, pushed him out of the apartment, and called 911. Security video from the apartment hallway matched the woman's story. The man needed four staples to close the cut on his head. His blood alcohol level was 0.256, according to the report. He was arrested pending charges of disorderly conduct and criminal trespass. So, basically, what we're saying here is he was drunk, and then he was hammered. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? If you grew up like me, watching a lot of television in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, then there's a good chance you watched a lot of shows featuring actress Joyce Boulafont. You might remember her as Murray's wife on The Mary Tyler Moore Show, her guest starring roles on a myriad of shows, or her varied appearances on game shows. Joyce has just released her memoirs entitled My Four Hollywood Husbands, and she joins us on the line right now from Colorado. Hi, Joyce.
Hi, I know it seems as if I'm in Colorado because that's my telephone number, but I'm in Palm Springs where it's very sunny.
Okay.
Colorado is where two of my children and some grandchildren live, so I keep that number.
Gotcha. Now, I, as I said, watched a lot of television shows growing up and saw you a lot. And for a lot of us who grew up in the 70s, we were babysat by game shows, which you were on a lot. So,
yes.
So I think a lot of us know you well. One of the things, though, I often ask people is, why write this memoir now? But I understand this is actually something you've tried to write for many years and only got it out now. What was the holdup?
24 years. Well, I'm dyslexic, and it had different titles and different ways to go. The first title was Home Sweet Home, Where Is It? Because I've lived in so many different places in my life. And then the other title was Don't Forget the Funny Bone, which my very famous mother-in-law, Helen Hayes, that's the only acting note she ever gave me. And then I would put it away, and I was working, and I had children, and I was moving. And then a friend called about 2 years ago and said, I have the title for your book. And he told me the title, and I said, that is so tacky. That's disgusting. I would never call my book that. I'd never title it that. And then I thought about it, and 2 weeks later I thought, you know what? That might sell books, and it's a way to go with the story that is much more important to tell than just, here's my life. And it could, because it involves why were there so many husbands. And the why is all has to do with alcoholism and my codependency and the effect that had on my children. And that is the main thrust of the story, but within that story is all stories about Hollywood in the glamour years and the golden years, and also a wonderful love story of my now husband, a husband number four. There's one that sneaked in there that I don't talk about that's too scary, so I just kind of touched on him. So there really have been sadly five husbands, but it took a lot of learning and a lot of mistakes until I finally learned about my codependency and how to handle that. And I feel so happy because so many people have written to me and said how helpful the book was to them in their relationship. So if the book does nothing else except that, that makes me happy.
The one thing I noticed in looking through the information is that, again, the fact that we knew you so well, or thought we knew you so well, through all the things we watched on television through the years, and the reality is that we didn't really know you. And I think it's interesting in a world of tabloid fodder news and the likes that we've seen nowadays with social media, that you managed to have a very visible career throughout your entire career, yet personally you managed to stay under the radar.
I did. I always wanted to protect the men that I loved, and I wanted to protect my children, and I wanted to protect my famous mother-in-law from anything that was unsavory and distressing. And then as I was writing this, and I thought, you know, it's not good to keep secrets. It's not good to keep secrets in families. And if you have some little tiny notoriety, maybe my story will help other people. Instead of looking at somebody and thinking, oh, she's always smiling and laughing, she doesn't have any problems, maybe it would help people. And especially the children who are caught in that web of alcoholism and codependency. I mean, my greatest sadness of my life is that I put my children through any of that emotional distress.
Now, when you talk about alcoholism, are you talking about a situation involving yourself or the various husbands that you've had?
My husbands. But I contributed to it by being a codependent person. I accepted the behavior, and every day I thought, it's going to get better, it won't be so bad, and he'll learn. And I think it has to do a lot with having a big ego. If I love this person, who I'm sure drinks because they're sad, but if I love them, they won't be sad anymore and they won't drink. Well, that's not true, because it's a disease. And I'm certainly not that much of a wizard at all.
I'm sure writing this book. I'm sure writing this book, even though, as you say, it took you a long time from beginning to end to get through to it, I'm sure writing this book and looking at the husbands that you had and the relationships you've had with them, it must have been cathartic for you to do this. In standing back and looking at it, what do you think it says about you as far as the types of men you were attracted to and married?
Well, the types of men that I were attracted to were very creative men, but they all had a dark side, but they had a dark side they couldn't overcome, and they had to cover up and feel better with drinking or pills, and that interfered with our marriage and their attitude towards our children. And what I've learned, I learned one really important thing real late in writing the book. I do a show called Remembering Helen Hayes with Love, and it's about an older famous actress and a young actress who becomes her daughter-in-law and our up-and-down relationship. And I realized that she was trying to help me by saying some of the very devastating things she'd said about her son, James MacArthur. I realized, I kept thinking, why is she being so mean? Why is she so terrible to him? Why does she say these things? And I realized in writing that she was trying to save me from a life that she'd had with her wonderful husband, she adored, Charles MacArthur, a famous playwright, who was a womanizer and an alcoholic. And she was trying to save me from that. But I didn't see that until it was all laid out in the book. And the other thing was my big ego thinking I could make these people happy when that's not going to do it. They have to want to be well, and they have to get help. And I'm certainly not a professional person to do that. But so that was, and also I wanted to write it because I was hoping that people who were in the same situation would see, if they have children, the terrible effect that it has on children and lasting effect. And I just thought if I could help in that way, but also be telling the story of the golden age of Hollywood and my great love story, our great love story with my husband, Roger Perry, is woven throughout the book, and how he overcame and went to get help and for 21 years has been sober. So that's why our marriage is so happy. And I just was hoping it would help. And, you know, I get these wonderful letters and emails saying, oh, your book has helped me so much. And, wow, that's all. I couldn't ask for anything more.
Excellent. Well, I want to talk about some of your career and a little bit more about your husband's. We'll take a quick break as we are talking here with Joyce Boulafont. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back here on the Stuff File program.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
I'm Bob Derigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. It's no surprise to hear that law professors do a lot of things other than teach law. They serve as expert witnesses, provide free legal advice, and often write scholarly articles. But they also file lawsuits, too. Lots of them. Until recently, however, no one knew what kind of record law professors have when they set out to practice what they preach, so to speak. Until now. A new study by, who else, a law professor, finds that the lawsuits filed by members of his profession are striking for how often they focus on three things: dissatisfaction with and professional jealousy of their colleagues, disagreements with and distrust of administrators, and a feeling that others are receiving better and undeserved treatment. Let's be fair, you're probably wondering how they fare in all those lawsuits, right? Well, the study found that law professors generally do a poor job of assessing their chances, for they lose much more often than they win. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world,
This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And we are talking here on the Stuff File program with Joyce Boulafont. Her book is My Four Hollywood Husbands. I want to talk about two husbands in particular because, full disclosure, as I said earlier, fan of yours, have been for a long time, was also a fan of one of your husbands. You mentioned him, James MacArthur, son of Helen Hayes,
yes.
Star of Hawaii Five-O, and if you go back a little further, Swiss Family Robinson for and other things.
Yeah. Battle of the Bulge. He did a lot of work.
Yeah. So, what was it like being part of, quite frankly, a Hollywood couple? Because, you know, people love the fairy tale, actress meets actor, becomes a couple. What was it like for you at that time?
Well, it was very exciting because Walt Disney was wonderful, and he would always have the wife of his stars go first class along with the star, Jim, and treat them in the most divine and elegant way. But what Jimmy and I would do is we'd cash in. At this time, you could do that. You can't do it anymore. We'd cash in the first-class tickets and get tourist tickets and travel around the world. So that was terribly exciting. And Jimmy was wonderful and charming and fun to be with until he had a sip of his second or third drink, and he would turn into a completely other person. And he knew who he could drink in front of and who he couldn't drink in front of. Some alcoholics are very clever about that. So as much on the outside, it was terribly glamorous and very exciting, but it also became very dark and threatening and scary.
One of your other husbands.
And it wasn't worth staying in a situation like that, no matter how glamorous it was.
One of your other husbands is the famous producer William Asher. People might remember the fact that he produced such shows as Bewitched. And
yes.
And at one time, wasn't he also married to Elizabeth Montgomery?
He was. And I was lucky enough to be stepmother to his three children with Elizabeth and two others from his first marriage. And we're all so close. My children and his children, we just are one big happy family. And Bill adopted my son, John, and he just looked up to his father like crazy. And we're just all one big happy family. We're like the United Nation of family. We've got everything. We've got gay, we've got straight, we've got Hispanic, we've got Japanese, we've got Black, and we all love each other, and we all have holidays together, and it's very, very lucky, and they adore my husband, Roger.
Mm. As I mentioned in the introduction, you played Murray's wife on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, which means you also played Helen Hunt's mother. And
yes.
And I remember you from the game shows, but I want to talk a little bit about the as busy as you were everywhere on television, the role that got away. You were actually supposed to be Carol Brady on the Brady Bunch. What happened?
That's right. I was signed. I was signed and wardrobed, and the little girls were chosen to look like me, and I did all the film tests with all the men. I was set, but they were looking for a husband. And Friday before we were shooting on Monday, I was showing the wardrobe to the producer and the director, and they had the strangest look on their face when I would come in and show them something. And I finally sat down, and I said, "Is something wrong?" And they said, "Yes." They said, "We don't know what to do. We're fighting so hard for you. But ABC in New York wants Florence Henderson, who just became available. And they have the final say." And they had to completely recast because I was supposed to be the funny part to the housekeeper, who was straight. So Florence is not as much of a comedian. So they had to recast the housekeeper and make her the funny one. I made Florence more straight, and it was it was a very strange time. I mean, I had two little children. I was just divorced from Jimmy, and I had a 7-year contract. But Florence and I had the same agent. Is that amazing? And for a gift, when I left, they gave me the going away suit I was wearing after the wedding. I thought that's really appropriate. But they were so nice. Sherwood Schwartz, who was a producer, he was so upset because he saw the show going a whole different way than it went. But obviously, it did very well. And Florence, the lovely, lovely person and a wonderful actress. So it all worked out great for them. And it worked out really well for me because I went on to do other things. And at the moment, it hurt. But I always feel God closes that door. He opens a window. And I just thought, well, that's the business. Those things happen. And you just go on.
Wow. Now, Match Game. Again, you did a lot of game shows, but Match Game was the one I think a lot of us remember you from. There were a lot of double entendres and a lot of jokes on that show that, I got to admit, back in the day when it was on, I had to get my mother to explain some of them to me, and she wouldn't want to.
But, and probably some of them had to be explained to me, too, when I said them.
But looking back at that show, it was all fun and jovial, and it seemed like a good time. But in hindsight now, especially with what's going on with the Me Too movement, there were some mm-hmm. darker sides to doing that show, wasn't there?
Yes, there were. The kind of thing where I talk about it in the book a bit, that, you know, I would try to get up the back stairs to my dressing room from the stage, and it was a narrow stairway, and I would meet Gene Rayburn and one of the producers coming down the stairs, and they would lay a wet kiss on me, and I just, right on my lips, and I just, you know, I couldn't say, oh, don't do that, you know. First of all, I'm being a codependent person, I wouldn't do that. And I just get to my dressing room and go, ugh, and wipe it off, and then try to find a time when they weren't coming down the stairs when I was going up. And there's an episode with Richard Dawson that I write about in the book. But I'll let the readers read that. But it was, the Me Too thing is very important. I mean, women are more codependent and will go along with things when they shouldn't. But I also think that sometimes we put ourselves out there, maybe without realizing it, in a very naive way, say to a man, I'm available, when you really aren't available. And I think the movement is very good because it'll make women be more aware of being more careful, and it'll certainly make men hopefully be more respectful. I hope.
There is so much.
And then, like everything, sometimes the movement goes too far.
Right.
You know, the pendulum swings too far. But right now, I think it's important that the movement is happening.
There is so much to talk to you about, and we're running out of time. One of the things I did want to ask, though, is are you still working? Can we still see you?
Yes. Well, I've been doing a lot of benefits. I do a show called Remembering Helen Hayes with Love, which is sometimes I do as a benefit. Sometimes I get paid. I do a lot of benefits here in the Valley to raise money for the theaters here. And I love doing theater. And, of course, I did a movie for my son called Tooken, which it's a takeoff on the movie Taken, which is on Netflix. And I play an 80-year-old dirty mouth CIA agent. Talk about asking your mother what things mean. I kept saying, John, honey, my son's name is John Asher. He's a director and a writer and an actor. And I said, honey, what does this mean? He said, Mom, don't ask, just do it. It's a bit naughty and risque. And then he's wonderful. He always puts me in his films. He says for good luck, which is nice. And I love working. I adore it. And I'm most comfortable on stage or doing what they call a three-camera show where there's an audience. I love doing that. So, yes, I am working. I hope to work as long as I can.
Well, that's good to hear. Again, there's so much we could talk to you about. I wish we had more time. But people can find your book. The book is called My Four Hollywood Husbands, and it's chock full of information and the story of the story of your life, but it's literally the story of your lives because you've had many.
Oh, isn't it true?
Thank you very much for being on the program with us, Joyce.
Well, thank you, and love to Canada, our neighbor.
Actress Joyce Boulafont. Her book is My Four Hollywood Husbands. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the page for this show, which is show number 0448, and you'll find links to Joyce's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. Also, I urge you to check out her role in the film Tooken. It's a comedy spoof of the film Taken, and it's directed by her son, John Asher. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We've got just a few more minutes to go here on this edition of the Stuff File program. Just want to mention quickly, by the way, that love talking to people like Joyce. I've talked to a lot of people like Joyce over the years. I'm a fan of celebrities, as I think you may have figured that out over the period of time that you've heard this show. And you may have even purchased my book. If you haven't purchased my book, here's a chance to plug it. Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars has many celebrities in it, and like the title says, within the pages you'll find some of the celebrity encounters I've had with Oscar winners like Carl Malden, Cloris Leachman, and Christopher Plummer, Emmy winners like Ed Asner, Michael Moriarty, and Lindsay Wagner, Tony winners like Carol Channing and Julie Newmar, a host of TV icons, plus two guys who left their footprints on the moon. So order it now. It's available in hardcover, softcover, and for your e-reader on Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, as well as at my publisher's website, which is BearManorMedia.com. All the links are on our website at TheStuffFile.com, so buy the book. What are you waiting for? I've got one more Stuff File news story to share with you before we get to our idiot of the day, by the way, so I guess that's what you're waiting for. So let's get to that Stuff File story, shall we? A woman who visited Hamburger Mary's in Tampa is suing the establishment for $1.5 million after she said she was injured by a drag queen's breasts. According to the complaint, Neldine Molino said she was with other guests and family members at the restaurant for dinner in May of 2015 to celebrate a friend's birthday. The suit said Molina was unaware of the drag queen show until music began playing and she heard someone at another table mention the show. Molina, sitting with her back to the table, watched the show before turning back around and continuing to eat and socialize with her friends. When Molina turned around again, she said performer Amanda DeHood, or is it DeHod? Well, let's just call her Amanda, pointed at her and began to walk toward her table. In the complaint, Molina said she turned back around, not wishing to draw attention to herself. Amanda then touched Molina's shoulder and then walked in front of her and grabbed her head. The complaint said the performer then wiggled her breasts against the plaintiff's face and head 8 times. Who counts these things, by the way? The performer allegedly grabbed Molina's face and pushed it and shook it several times before pounding it against her own chest violently. The complainant said Molina began to experience a headache and neck pain and told the manager what had happened. Molina later went to the emergency room at Memorial Hospital in Tampa for cervical pain and uncontrollable headaches. Molina is seeking $1.5 million for medical costs and expenses for the past, present, and future, as well as for pain she suffered physically and mentally. The complaint also states that the restaurant failed to advise anyone of possible danger. Okay, headaches and neck pain, I might understand. But cervical pain? Really? Also, what were those breasts made of? Ball bearings? Good Lord. Anyway, we are at that point, boys and girls, the end of the program, just before the end of the program, the penultimate point of the program, I guess you could call it. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. This stuff off presents the Idiot of the Day.
A couple who demanded thousands of pounds in compensation after they caught food poisoning on holiday were caught after posting poolside selfies online. 21-year-old Chelsea Devine and 22-year-old Jamie Melling from Liverpool claim they were ill for weeks after eating and drinking during their 10-day all-inclusive trip to Benidorm in Spain. But a judge found them fundamentally dishonest and ordered them to pay holiday operator TUI £15,000. That's a record amount for costs awarded against a fraudulent claim of holiday sickness. Liverpool County Court heard how the pair were caught out after posting photos of their holiday at the Levante Beach Apartments in September 2015 on Facebook. The pictures show them smiling and happy in their room and swimming in the pool. But in May of 2016, they submitted identical claims, each demanding £2,500 in compensation. The judge said, "I find that they have not proved that they were ill. I cannot accept that they would upload photographs of themselves as a happy couple if the holiday was as they claim. The statements are identical. They say they did not collude, but it is clear the statements were not written by them. There are inaccuracies in them. They did not complain at the time, despite it being easy to do so. The couple have been ordered to pay the money by this coming Friday." Yikes. Now, why, oh why, would you make claims that food poisoning ruined your holiday when your own Facebook photos clearly prove otherwise? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0448. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0448. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, or you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Evolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now. Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I've said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.